From WBUR in Boston, I'm Bill Littlefield, and this is NPR's Only a Game.
The runners want to come back and say to everyone at Boston, we're going to come out to tell you, even if we don't live here, that we feel part of the Boston community and all you went through last year.
A record 36,000 runners will take to the Boston Marathon route a year after deadly bombs exploded near the finish line of the world's oldest marathon. Ahead on Only a Game, a city remembers as it moves forward. Also coming up, Hall of Famer Johnny Bench recalls the thrill of his first baseball card, the story of a minor league baseball hero, why the West Coast is the most happening hockey hotbed, the NCAA dishes up delicious meal reforms to hungry athletes, and why Hong Kong is crazy for rugby. Stay tuned. This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. Of the 16 teams battling in the recently begun NHL postseason, Montreal is the sole Canadian squad. The paucity of playoff teams from north of the border is in stark contrast to the three hailing from California, Anaheim, Los Angeles, and San Jose. In other words, all of them. Here to explain the heyday of West Coast hockey is Helene Elliott of the LA Times. Helene, what has the Golden State done to deserve such hockey riches?
I know, aren't we lucky? And we also have had a very good winter, which I know is probably a sensitive topic with you back there in the Northeast.
Let's move right along from that.
Yeah, it's just kind of been building the last few years. I mean, you look at San Jose, they've been a power and a contender for 6, 7, 8 years. You look at the Kings, they won the Cup in 2012, went to the conference finals last year. The Ducks won the Stanley Cup in 2007. They finished number one in the West this year. You know, I always laugh when people say, oh, West Coast hockey, ha, ha, ha. It's not West Coast hockey. It's good hockey that happens to be played on the West Coast.
On Thursday night, the San Jose Sharks thrashed the L.A. Kings 6-3. You and I have chronicled the Sharks' ebb and flow in recent years. Will 2014 see a playoff frenzy for San Jose?
You know, I always have one rule. Never pick the San Jose Sharks to win anything.
So you're not going to break that rule this year?
I'm not going to break that rule, but I think that the Kings are in for a pretty big fight here. The Sharks have made the Kings look very slow, forced the Kings into making a lot of turnovers that they don't usually make. They've really taken the Kings off their game.
The Sharks and Kings are facing each other as a result of the National Hockey League's tweaking of its playoff format. What changes were made and how have they affected this year's first round matchups otherwise?
This season, for the first time, the NHL has wild card playoff teams. And I think it's really kind of amusing that the two wild cards in the East are the two teams that moved over this season from the West to the East. To my mind, that just emphasizes how good Western teams are and how much better they are than the East. It's also a different format in the sense that there are brackets and it stays pretty much within the division. There are people who like that. They think it creates some more intense rivalries. Everything I've seen in terms of interest and web hits and TV ratings has been very good. So maybe they're onto something.
Does the recent success of these California teams translate to more young Californians taking up ice hockey?
Oh, absolutely. There's a kid on the San Jose Sharks, Matt Nieto, who's from Long Beach, which is in Southern California. The Ducks have a kid named Emerson Edom, who also grew up in Long Beach. You see a lot of kids from Southern California playing in colleges, in the Canadian junior ranks. As the Sharks and the Ducks and the Kings all continue to have success, I think that'll only influence more kids to take up the sport.
So what you're saying is if everybody had an ocean across the USA, it wouldn't matter because the kids would want to play hockey anyway.
Instead of Surf City, it'll be Hockey City.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, they're great athletes here. We're in Southern California and Northern California. We've always produced a lot of figure skaters, and why not hockey players?
Helene Elliott covers the L.A. Kings and all things NHL for the L.A. Times, and she is our chronicler of the coolest North American game. Thanks, Helene.
Thank you.
Last weekend, Schenectady, New York, rang with the shouts of "We're number one," or at least I imagine that it did, because the men's hockey team from Union College, which is located in Schenectady, won the NCAA championship. Joining me is the head coach of that team, Rick Bennett. And coach, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Union student body totals just over 2,000. The college is much smaller than the universities that usually win NCAA D1 championships. Was your team the kid decking giants with a slingshot this year, or is that comparison not appropriate?
Maybe back a little bit a few years ago, you might have thrown that one in there. Yeah, we have a rink that seats 2,500. You know, you have 2,200 students, but, you know, we feel we have a great sell here. We're a trimester school, so they can really focus on school, and then they can focus on hockey and do some extra in both. And I think when they take care of the classroom, it's really helped their hockey, and I think through that, great things can happen.
In the final against Minnesota last weekend, your team scored 7 times to Minnesota's 4. In your happiest pregame dreams, did you anticipate that Union would score 7 goals Saturday night?
Getting on the elevator to the game, the guy jumped on, and I think he had Frozen Four stuff on, and he said, the score is going to be 6-3 Union tonight. And he had no idea who we were, and it was kind of nice. He was darn close, and that was quite a call.
You've only been the head coach at Union for a few years, and you've had your team in the Frozen Four twice. You've won a national championship now to go with the ECAC trophies and various other awards you've won. I wonder if Union is concerned that one of the bigger schools, or maybe the NHL, is going to come calling for their coach.
I'm going to say the same thing that a former Division I coach told me. He says, you know, what happens when a big school is going to come after you? And I said, what makes you think that Union College is not a big school? So that's kind of how I have addressed it. I enjoy coming to the rink every day. It's not work. So, you know, I'm really lucky. And I don't know if moving on somewhere else is the right answer.
Rick Bennett is the head coach of the NCAA National Champion men's hockey team at Union College. Coach, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
From 1967 to 1983, Johnny Bench of the Cincinnati Reds earned the Rookie of the Year Award, 2 National League MVP awards, 14 trips to the All-Star Game, and 10 Gold Gloves. For good measure, he played in the World Series 4 times with a big red machine. Bench is widely considered to be one of the greatest catchers of all time, and these days he's into baseball cards. We could go on listing his achievements, but then I might run out of time for the interview. Joining me is Baseball Hall of Famer Johnny Bench. Welcome to Only a Game.
Well, it's great to be part of Only a Game. I am such a big fan. I mean, growing up in a small town in Oklahoma with Mickey Mantle as my idol and being a true card collector, hoping to get Mickey Mantle's 52-card rookie card, which is my total goal in life, even though I never got it. And now I go around when I go to a memorabilia show buying my cards back up. Of course, now Topps coming out with their 2014 Series 1 sets. You can get all the young stars, players of the past. You can win top 50 rookies, win memorabilia. You can even win a Mickey Mantle. So I never got a Mickey Mantle card, so I may have to try to do it this way. I may have to go online myself if I get my kids to figure out how to get me online.
Johnny, you're working with the Topps Baseball Card Company. Do you remember receiving your first card after you'd reached the majors?
Surely you jest. Of course I do. My goodness gracious. That's what made you a major leaguer. So I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And now I say, look at me. You know, you could carry them around here, have my card.
Were there other cards that you remember from your boyhood besides that elusive Mickey Mantle card?
Rocky Colavito. I don't know what it was, but that name just sort of like a Rocky, you know, and he looked like a Rocky. And it was kind of like, you know, you got some really cool cards, and I was a fan of all the players and everything else. But, you know, we only got the paper once a week in my town, so it wasn't like they had the box scores and you knew everything was going on. But, you know, the game of the week, when my dad and I would go down and get a half gallon Neapolitan ice cream, we'd watch the game of the week, and of course, the Yankees were on there most of the time. Tony Cuccinello. I mean, here was Dizzy throwing out the name and doing all this stuff. And here I am, 19 years old, and I'm in Connie Mack Stadium, and there's Johnny Callison, and here's Richie Allen. And you go to the All-Star game, and here's Willie Mays, and here's Hank Aaron, and you're catching behind them. So, yeah, I was a lucky man.
In the 70s with the Reds, you went to the World Series 4 times, won it twice, went to another 2 National League Championship Series. Your first full season with the team was 68. How quickly did you realize you were part of an extraordinary team?
Well, I mean, 1970, we started off the year 70 and 30. And here I am playing with Tony Perez in 68, Pete Rose, Tommy Helms, Veda Pinson. And we were close. We were really close. It would just seemed like we needed one more thing to make it happen. In 1970, we started off with Lee May hitting, and we were just dominating. We had teams say, why don't you just give it to them now? And then we were 32-30, and yet here we were 32-30 to end the year, and we won 102 games. I mean, it was just phenomenal. And then when we failed a little bit in 71, the trade was made for Joe Morgan, for Cesar Geronimo, for Jack Billingham. Dennis Mickey came over and hit Armbrister. And that's when we really got it. We had a swagger. That's when Joe had a chip on his shoulder, and Pete Rose was Pete Rose. And we had Gold Glove center fielder. We had a Gold Glove shortstop in Davey Concepcion. We had Ken Griffey. I mean, we had other teams come out to watch us take batting practice. They'd watch us take fielding practice. It was that kind of ball club.
St. Louis Cardinals legend Lou Brock, one of the game's greatest base stealers, spoke to you after you had thrown him out early in your career, threw him out at second base by a pretty significant margin. Tell us a little bit about what happened next.
Well, we had a pitcher named Jack Fisher, and Lou had stolen 33 bases in a row, I think it was. And he took off against Jack, and Jack looked slow, but he wasn't. I threw it to second, and Lou hadn't started his slide. He stopped and looked back at me. Just look back at me. What the hell was that? And so after the game, I'm sitting in my locker, and I look up, and it's Lou. And he looked down and said, next time, kid, make it look close. And it was the most amazing thing to me. I mean,